Welcome to the Meal Mentor Podcast. I'm your host, Lindsay S. Nixon. This is the 34th episode in the co-pilot series where we can chat about making the plant-based lifestyle more doable, especially when we face all the challenges and roadblocks and we're trying to get healthy and live in a different world that's different from what we want to do and lose weight and all that craziness. Anyway, today's co-pilot, my special guest, is a longtime member. And so she's got all kinds of insight into what it's like to just get on board, jump, you know, do the whole meal plan train. But what I also love is she's also been very honest in sort of like the forums and the group about some struggles she's had at work and sort of dealing with that climate. And I think that's something, that's a place where a lot of us find difficulty because we, you know, have to kind of do that line of professionalism and not really be too personal. So we're going to talk a lot about that today. But before I talk anymore, Jen, welcome.
Hi, Lindsay, oh, and all the podcast listeners.
There is that voice. Okay, good. So yes. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself, how you kind of got to plant-based and the meal plans, just so we have a little bit of a background.
Okay, sure. Well, I've been plant-based for about 3.5 years. I started after I had been through a period where I was working a job where my work was my entire life. And I was just in a really unhealthy place, just kind of eating what I could, when I could, and too much of all of that. Mm-hmm. And and then I was doing some Netflixing, and I think I saw Forks Over Knives and Food Inc. back to back.
Oh, wow. That's pretty powerful together.
Yeah. And then I think after I saw those two, I was like, okay, well, I got to look more into this. And I think that was maybe February of 2011. And then by April 1st, I was entirely plant-based and on board.
So you just jumped right in right away.
Yeah, once I saw that the science was there and, I ate what was left in my fridge and I just never bought any more. And I was in 100%. And yeah, I've lost easily 70 pounds since then. And I've been able to maintain that. And I think one of the reasons I picked up the meal plans was because I kind of plateaued and I still have a little bit left. And so I wanted to sort of refocus and regroup and take off that little extra weight. So,
well, 70 pounds is incredible and you should feel so amazing about that because that's awesome.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it certainly does feel awesome.
Do you feel just like a whole new woman?
Yeah, yeah. I have such a different life now. I'm an endurance cyclist. I ride Century Rides, which are 100-mile bike rides on my bike.
Holy cow. Oh, my God. I'm getting tired just thinking about it.
You know, I find it's amazing. Like, once you make that transition to the healthy diet, how you start seeing other things in your life that have nothing to do with food that can be healthier, too. You know, just one precedes the other, and it's just a really great domino effect.
Hey, I really appreciate you saying that because it's something we don't get to a lot on the podcast, but I definitely know that other people feel that way just in talking to them before or after recording that, like you know, they never saw themselves as even like the littlest bit athletic, and they don't, you know, they're not out running triathlons or anything, but they've just become more active. Like, they go for bike rides, they go for walks, you know, their life really does change in other ways beyond just what they're eating, you know, or even just they can walk through the mall all day and not feel tired and need a nap and have pain in their knees anymore.
Right. Yeah. You know, you can spend a whole day at a theme park and not be wiped out for days afterwards.
Exactly. Right. And it's these things you just forget, like, oh, I used to not be able to do this. Like, my parents are in their late 60s or almost in their 70s, and they walk 4 miles around a lake. And it wasn't that long ago, you know, 10 years ago, they couldn't do that. And they're older now, but because their lifestyle has changed in more ways than one, they just feel so good they can go do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I love hearing that.
Yeah. And then, you know, like, and then when you're out doing those things, the people you meet and you interact with are also the kinds of people who are healthier and they're doing those kinds of things. And, you know, it's a really great domino. Okay.
It is. I love that you say domino effect, because it does seem to just kind of breed more goodness. You know, oh, I made a good choice, so I feel good, so I make more good choices, so now I'm doing this healthy thing, and I'm meeting other healthy people that, you know, motivate me to continue and do better. You know, it really is kind of like a snowball in the right direction.
Yeah, yeah. And that's another thing about, you know, doing the meal plans and having the support groups, the forums, and the Facebook group is that, you know, you're really sort of surrounding yourself with those people who have sort of the same intentions for healthfulness that you do. And you can really draw strength from that. It's really cool.
I know. I love it. Just on my weakest days, even if I don't say anything like, oh, I need help or whatever, just being in the presence of other people, like really kicking butt, just gives me what I need. Just to see others succeeding, like it just helps me, even if they don't even say anything or know that I'm struggling over here quietly by myself.
Yeah.
It's just like the visual of seeing like, oh, that person did it today, you know, okay, I can do it too. Mm-hmm. So one thing I loved you posted, this was a long time ago, this was several weeks ago, back in June, you talked about the candy pass at work and how there's this practice at work where they kind of bring candy out, and it's one of these things that you've struggled with the whole time, and you recently, I think, adopted a rule not to eat candy. So I thought maybe you could sort of tell us what this is and how you're dealing with it, because I think something that happens to a lot of people at work.
I you know, I would imagine. There's this really nice guy in our office, and every day at exactly 3 o'clock on the nose, he goes around to everybody's cubicle and he tosses a little fun size Snicker or, you know, just a little tiny candy. And he tosses one to every single person. And, you know, it's like everybody's little afternoon treat, and it's kind of their pick me up. And, you know,
Everyone starts to slump around that time.
Exactly. So they get a little sugar bump, and, you know, and they have this little treat to look forward to in the afternoon. And it's something that I've really struggled with, because, you know, as much as I can avoid cookies that are sitting in the break room, if I'm sitting there working and somebody literally throws candy at me every day.
Literally is throwing candy at you.
Like, oh, hey, heads up. And then they toss a candy at you. So, using advice you had on the forums about making rules about not doing X or doing Y and being very specific about those rules, I wrote a little post-it and stuck it on my computer that says, I don't eat candy. I just don't. Mm-hmm. And so now they throw the candy to me, and, I've kind of struggled. Like sometimes if there's not an opportunity for me to do it discreetly, I'll just throw it in the trash in my cubicle. Or, you know, if I have the opportunity, you know, I'll just like walk it into the break room and set it there, and whoever scavenges it does that. But, I just had to lay down that rule, because otherwise, there was that little chip was happening every day at this helpfulness that I was trying to build, you know?
So. Well, and then you also, I mean, I know with me, you then are kind of like, oh man, why did I do that? I knew better, you know? And then I just like think about it and replay it over and over again. Like somehow I can like go back in time and fix it, but then I can't.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you're like, well, that was so dumb. Like I did all this great stuff for myself today. Why was that the hurdle that I couldn't get over, you know? And then you feel so triumphant when you do get over it.
Right, right. And I think there's a lot at play there, too. It's, as you said, you can't just avoid the cookies in the break room. If you know there's cookies in the break room and you just don't go to the break room, you don't go to the cookies, you know, it's like out of sight, out of mind, you're moving along. But here, it's like you said, it's literally being thrown at your head. I mean, someone is truly, I mean, it's one step from putting it in your mouth, basically.
Right, right.
That's different, because you can't, like, out of sight, out of mind. Another thing, of course, is that it's free. And I know a lot of members talk about this all the time, is how hard it is for them when it's free. And someone said something so powerful recently that she said, I realize now that free food still has a cost.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're dealing with the free thing. But the other two, and I think this stands outside of work too, is that you don't want to hurt someone else's feelings. And you also don't want to be like different. So I love how you're still taking it and then you're either discreetly getting rid of it or you're giving it back to the community. You're sending it back out to general population.
Yeah. You know, I think it's really important, you know, for those of us that kind of eat this way to be good ambassadors for our lifestyle. And, you know, I don't think being abrasive to the guy whose intentions are very good, you know, is doing anyone any favors, you know? So if I can allow him to do the action, which he thinks is benevolent, and then also stay true to myself, then everybody wins, you know? So.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's definitely something I struggled with early on. I remember, you know, family members would give me things that they meant it genuinely kindly. And they tried. A lot of times they just didn't know, like, oh, I didn't eat eggs or something. Like, they were just really trying hard. And I didn't always I wasn't mean, like, oh, I can't, you know, ew, thank you. But I was always like, oh, I can't have it. And then I would just see them get all, like, defeated and sad. And
yeah.
I realized that. And then I felt even worse because they felt sad. So I ended up starting to just, like, take it. Give it to someone else or, you know, get rid of it in a discreet way. And then at another time, be like, oh, by the way, I meant to tell you I also don't eat this. or mm-hmm. I'm not eating this now because it doesn't make me feel good. Like, you know, find not the time. Not like, no, you know, just stop with the abrasive, you know, no, you know, thank you. And then giving it to someone else is a nice thing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the intent is still good. You know, that person doesn't know that they're, you know, pushing something on you that you're trying to avoid, basically.
Yeah, he has no idea about this inner struggle you're having with yourself.
No. And, you know, really, that's not his problem.
Right, yeah.
And if I can, you know, handle that in a way that allows that kind action to still happen and not be disruptive and still in some sort of weird way participate in the office culture and mm-hmm. then get rid of it, then yeah, it's a win-win.
Yeah, and it's so hard too because I know a lot of times in an office, you know, you are friendly with your coworkers, but maybe you're not super personal. You know, maybe you're just not, or maybe you're not even comfortable sharing super personal things. Like I remember, I didn't want to tell my coworkers that I had, you know, adopted a vegan plant-based diet. And it wasn't that I didn't like them or I didn't even think that they would tease me. It's just like, I don't want to hear their personal, you know, stuff. I don't want to hear about their, you know, religious beliefs or their political beliefs. I wanted to keep it very neutral. And
sure.
So I wasn't very ready to go be like, hey guys, guess what?
Yeah.
You know, because I really like to kind of have that sort of sense of privacy. Well, I don't have privacy anymore, but at the time, I really enjoyed my privacy and I respected theirs and, you know, to each his own. But so that, yeah, it presents that problem because it's like, well, do you want to be the person in the office that sticks out? And then I had that. I got outed. Everyone knew. And everyone made such a big deal out of it, which I didn't like. I didn't like the attention. Oh, we can't go here because Lindsay's a vegan now. And I was like, no, really. Let's please go to the steakhouse that everyone loves. I'm sure they have vegetables.
Yeah.
But I wanted to avoid that so hard. And inevitably, I did not.
Yeah. You know, I think particularly in the office environment, I found that dieting is a big topic in the...
This is true.
You know, so oftentimes, you know, people love to talk about how they're trying to lose weight when they sit at an office all day. So I've discovered that if I couch my eating habits in terms of diet and health, as opposed to, oh, well, I'm a vegan TM, or I don't eat animal products, then mm-hmm. that tends to be a little more palatable to the general, you know, to the people in the office.
That's a really good point. I had forgotten about that until you said it, how much dieting is like a huge work culture. And I remember in all of the jobs I had in corporate America, there was always like Biggest Loser challenges and people were going on like the cabbage soup diet together or who could lose the most weight in the office. And I totally forgot about that until just now.
Yeah. People love to talk about, you know, how they're not meeting their goals or how they don't feel good or how they're going to try X, Y, or Z to try to finally get the weight off. So, you know, if I talk about my food and my struggles, not in terms of what I do or don't eat, but in terms of healthfulness, like sometimes that's a little more easy for people to understand.
Right. And you're also blending into that corporate conversation.
Yeah.
What did you say? The office culture?
Yeah, you have something to contribute around the water cooler.
That isn't, American Idol. Because I never knew any of the TV shows everyone talked about at the water cooler. I was like, I have no idea what. Oh, I can talk about potatoes.
Yeah.
Nobody else wants to talk about potatoes. Yeah. And it's funny because that actually is how I ended up getting a bunch of my. So after I went through my initial, everyone like poked and prodded at me. I ended up convincing a few of my coworkers to adopt Meatless Mondays. And it was through conversations of like health or diet. Like someone was saying, my husband wants to adopt Meatless Mondays. And I was like, oh, I have this great recipe. And then someone else was like, oh, my cholesterol was really high and I just can't imagine living without barbecue. And I was like, actually, there's these vegetarian barbecue roulette thingies that are really tasty and taste like a McRib. And I think you'll like them. And to this day, 9 years later, he still eats those for lunch.
Oh,
because we've stayed in touch. Yeah. And so it's like, it can work out. But my favorite is I would start bringing like muffins and stuff in and I would leave them in the break room and not eat them myself so that nobody knew that they were, vegan. And then by lunchtime, emails were going around. Who brought the, blueberry muffins? Who brought in the banana bread? Who was the recipe? Where is it? And then I'd be like, ha ha, you guys ate something that had like no oil and no eggs and no dairy, no butter. Booyah!
Sneaky.
That's what I did. Yeah. And it seemed started to come around, but yeah, that is, definitely the dieting though. That's so true. But I mean, you must be just the marvel of the office then. Oh, well, did you change jobs since the 70-pound loss? Because that was your old job, right?
Yeah, no, I've been at the same office through this entire journey.
Okay, that's the question I was trying to ask in the most roundabout way ever.
It's really interesting to watch people and how they try to process, how I did it. Because, people will ask, well, how did you do that? And I'm like, well, I adopted this whole foods plant-based diet. And they're like, but you ride your bike too, right? Like people don't want to.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, yeah, I ride my bike. But even when I don't have time to ride my bike, I still eat this way and the weight's still coming off.
That I get that too. I'll be like, oh, I eat a plant-based diet. But you also do yoga. And I'm like, guys, I sit there and I meditate for like 30 minutes. Like but they don't want to hear that. They want to hear like, oh, I can still eat whatever and ride my bike.
Sure.
And it certainly helps, but you can't exercise off a bad diet.
It's just really interesting the filters that go on people's listening. The message that I and I try not to talk about it unless people specifically ask me, but it's almost to the point where, no, guys, trust me, I'm the one doing this. This is what's making it work.
Right. No, for real, I'm not lying. It's not like when you see on TV and people are like, I just eat sensibly and exercise. No, I'm telling you, this is what I do.
Mm-hmm. It's a really hard thing for people to process. Like they want you to be healthy and they want you to lose weight, but they want you to do it within these specific parameters that they've been told are okay or that work. And they just don't work.
Yeah. I mean, I bought into that. I spent thousands and thousands of dollars on personal trainers and I never looked really the way I wanted to or even felt the way I wanted to. And yeah, I mean, at one point I could like do a squat with a whole bunch of weight, but I was like, this is not why I'm here.
Yeah.
It was really, for me, it always came back to diet.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing, kind of going back to your little, I don't eat candy rule. So for people who are listening who don't know about this, one of the things I said, I guess about a month ago, is I encouraged everyone to adopt two rules. And what it is when you create a rule, you draw this line and you know exactly where you stand. So you're not like constantly debating with yourself or having to dig deep for willpower. It's just, it bypasses willpower altogether. And eventually when you follow your rule enough, it actually just becomes, part of your life. It's just, you incorporate it. And so an example, of course, is if you've ever been in a committed relationship, you at some point stood on a line on a rule and said, I was going to be monogamous to this person. And, not every minute of every day were you going, okay, I'm not going to flirt. You eventually, you're just monogamous. So in like the vegan, same kind of thing. But anyway, so your rule was, I don't eat candy, which was partly to deal with this work issue, but with the guy throwing away the free candy. But what was your other rule?
My other rule is I don't eat chips because I used to have a real you know, Chip, that's kind of a weakness for me. You know, I live in Southern California. Tortilla chips and salsa are everywhere.
So yummy. I know, but
yeah,
not so healthful.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Tasty, but not contributing to my end goal, right? Which is to be healthy and to lose weight.
And so, have the rules helped you?
Oh, yeah. You know, I didn't think it would be that effective, but the psychological impact on that is pretty dramatic, I gotta say.
Okay, good. I was surprised at how well they worked for me as well. It seems so stupid, but the psychological magic is magic.
Yeah. Yeah, I you know, I think something you said in the forums when you were helping everybody fine tune their rules really stuck with me. It's that your rule has to be very specific, and it can't play into your like or dislike of something, because no matter if you say candy tastes bad, you still think it tastes good.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You can't lie to yourself with your rule. Like, I think candy tastes bad. No, you don't.
No, you don't.
No, you don't.
You're a liar. That's not true.
Yeah, and you also can't have like vague or aspirational rules. Like, I remember someone was like, I will try to avoid chips. I'm like, no aspiration. It's I don't eat chips.
Yeah. And you know, that worked. I was actually in a situation just today where I walked into the break room and there had been a potluck the day before where I had very successfully brought my Tropicale bowl and just sat with everybody and ate, and it was fine. But the next day, the leftovers were in the break room, and I was just going in there to pour myself a cup of tea, and there were chips sitting there. And I think I actually picked up the bag, and I was like, wow, too bad I don't eat chips anymore. And I set it down and I walked away. And I really don't think that would have ever happened had I not taken the time to write it down and stick it up where I could see it all the time.
Yeah. And I love that you even said it, you know, I don't eat it. You know, you actually had those words like in the thoughts of your mind.
Yeah.
And I've actually even had to say that out loud. Like, I was really like, I was staring down this cinnamon bun and I was just like, I don't eat cinnamon buns. I don't eat them. I don't eat cinnamon buns. They smell delicious. So I don't eat cinnamon buns. And I actually was like saying it out loud. And eventually, I think after the fifth time and my husband staring at me like I was weird, I was like, okay, I'm good now. But I actually got it from him, because when he was quitting smoking, he would say, I am not a smoker. Like, it was almost meditative.
Interesting.
So I think it, you know, sometimes we got to chant to ourselves, you know, but I love also that you put sticky notes everywhere, so you constantly saw the rules to remind you, I don't do this.
Yeah. I think too, I'm really hoping that having them out in plain sight will on some level allow my coworkers to see that those are things I don't want to do or participate in, even if I don't say them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe one day that really nice, well-meaning guy will see that and be like, oh, well, maybe, because I, you know, I'm not in a place where I feel it's appropriate to have a conversation with him about it, but,
right.
You know, maybe a coworker will come by and be like, oh, maybe Jen would like some of this candy. Oh, wait, she doesn't eat candy. You know.
Yeah. And that sort of kind of goes back to that whole work culture where you're not, it's not your best friend. It's not, you know, your boyfriend. It's not even your mom. It's like this person who you kind of know and you maybe just will never have the relationship or even the comfort level or even desire the comfort level to have that conversation. Like you were saying, like, you don't have a relationship with him to be like, hey, this is this thing about me. I don't eat candy.
Right. And yeah, like, my office is a relatively formal place. There aren't a lot of people who hang out outside of work. You know, there's not really that personal relationship there. And that's fine. But food choices are a very personal thing. And, you know, sometimes, especially given how we eat, that can be inflammatory to some people. And there's just easier for my emotional currency. There are far more easier ways to do that than to have a direct confrontational
right.
conversation.
Right. And I'm sure at some point, you know, it may come up. And if it doesn't, you have a great strategy. You just take it to the break room and let someone else have it.
Yeah.
Or you can even say, if you know your coworker really loves them, hey, do you want mine today? You know, there's always ways to sort of pass it off. Oh, God, I ate too much. I just can't have this.
I think, I don't know if that was you or somebody else in the forums that mentioned that, just tell people you're full because they respond to that better than, oh, I don't want that.
Oh, yeah. It really, really, it definitely works. And sometimes you really have to kind of say it a couple times, like, no, seriously, guys, I, like, totally ate too much. But although if it's a dieting culture, you could be like, it's over my calories. Although they might try to peer pressure you anyway. But the full thing seems to always work. Like, oh, I'm so full. I just can't. Or I'm going to take it home. I'm going to take it home. Because that's happened to me. Oh, well, here. And I'm like, yeah, I'll just take it with me. And then I find, you know, a nice homeless person that needs a warm meal. There's definitely always solutions. Mm-hmm. So, one other thing that you had said in, I can't remember if it was the forums or the group, but anyway, I really loved it, is you were really honest and said that, you always knew that there was like some kind of emotional eating going on, but then when you started the meal plans, you kind of got a deeper understanding of sort of yourself and what was happening.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that was a trip.
So like, what happens? Like, what was it that you realized? Like, how did this like big epiphany come?
Well, I think it was maybe the second week that my partner and I, we decided to do the meal plans in earnest. And, you know, I had my oatmeal in the morning and then I had my pre-portioned meal plan meal, and then I had like a fruit snack in the afternoon, and then dinner, and that's all I ate. And because it was so prescribed, I just found myself wanting food. And when I couldn't have the food, even if I wasn't hungry, I was just noticing that I was much more present to emotions that were coming up. Self-medicate might be too strong a term, but I'd be trying to distract myself with food. Like, man, if I wasn't on this meal plan right now, I would totally make XYZ. Or, you know, oh man, you know, I can't wait to go home and have dessert or whatever it was. And then I was like, no, wait, you know, oh, you're feeling something here. Like, maybe you should try to be present to that and not try to distract yourself with food. Yeah, I mean, I always knew that when I was stressed out, I would eat an extra cookie or whatever, but I had no idea how much food distraction was going on in my everyday life.
And I love that, because I think a lot of people, when they think of like stress eating or eating their emotions or eating down their feelings, they actually think of the physical act of eating, of, you know, going and having cake or cookies or something like, but as you experience, you just were distracting your thoughts with thoughts of food. It wasn't that you were necessarily actually eating, but you were just like constantly thinking about food instead of thinking about maybe something else.
Yeah. You know, and, you know, particularly since I'd been doing the plant-based thing for a while, you know, I was already eating, you know, kind of like you said in your story, quote unquote, good food, but I was eating an awful lot of it. And I think, you know, and I love to cook. So if I was kind of feeling down, oh, you know, maybe I'm not feeling that hungry, but there's that new recipe I wanted to try. Maybe I'll just kind of sink myself into that for a little while and cook something really fancy and, you know, mm-hmm. And you know, being strictly on the meal plans made me realize that, there were focusing on food and how much time and energy I was spending in my daily life thinking about food was probably more than I needed to be.
And that was something I also realized when I was using the meal plans consistently, is when I wasn't using the meal plans, I was always thinking about my next meal. Like, no sooner did I finish the meal I was having, but I was already thinking about what I was going to make next for my next meal. And at the time, that didn't seem very strange. Like, I'm planning my stuff out. And then afterward, once I had food already planned for me and I no longer had to think because it was just there, decided, and I just grabbed it out of the fridge and ate it, I realized, like, wow, I, like, thought about food so much. Yeah. And then I read all these studies where the more you think about food, or you, especially if you look at food, like you're looking at food pictures and stuff, especially if you're like trolling really decadent stuff, like food porn sites with like desserts, it actually triggers hunger. And so I was like, well, no wonder I was constantly eating.
Yeah, I can imagine, you know, somebody who's doing this for a living, where you're surrounded with people asking about food and talking about food and thinking about what to make. And
oh, yeah. Everyone at Happy Herbivore is like, we've all become very contained because we're constantly talking about food and looking at pictures, but we're just like, okay, like we've had to really sort of contain ourselves. And it's funny because one of my teammates, she was having a little bit of like a dietary thing. And so she was on this elimination diet. And at the time she was basically just eating potatoes, rice, and like three other things. It was super bland. And at that time, one of my cookbooks was coming out and she had to edit the food photos. And she was like, I can't even tell you how torturous that was and how I was constantly making myself hungry. But I knew it wasn't true because I had all these potatoes and rice already made for myself. And if I was truly hungry, the potatoes and rice would have been good for me. But I didn't want that. I was too busy wanting the things in the pictures. And so then all of us were like, wow, that's fascinating. So then everybody did this like little experiment with themselves where they basically did the elimination thing for a few days and then spent the whole day looking at food pictures. And every single one of us were like, holy wow. It literally triggered each of us to be like, I want that. And no amount of potato or rice or tomatoes or lettuce was satisfying. It was like true food triggers based on pictures.
I believe it. Yeah.
And so that really kind of shaped all of us. And so we're all like, okay, let's stop following BuzzFeed. Maybe we do not need to see the, like, oh God, what was the last thing I saw? It was so awful. It was s'mores, but it was made with glazed donuts instead of graham crackers. I shouldn't even talk about it because I think I'll start to twitch. But I was just like, this is why I can't follow this account.
Yeah, I think being fixated on food and wanting to focus really hard on it is something that is an easy trap, especially if you're new to this way of eating, you know. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people, especially if you've been on any sort of weight loss roller coaster, you know, feel like you need to really focus down and be really, you know, have really strong intentions and be very, very mindful. But I think, you know, one thing that the meal plan affords is, yeah, you have these things that you eat, it's planned out, it's done. You don't have to think about it anymore. And, you know, then that's an interesting kind of internal study. What comes up when you're not having to think about food all the time?
Right.
What does that do for you?
And I think that's something we all do, is I think we're kind of trained by our society to judge emotions, and we really shouldn't, because they're all just emotions, and none of them are better or worse. They all have this, you know, balance. They're all in tandem. But we think, oh, I shouldn't ever feel this way, and so we distract it in some other ways. And for you and for myself, it was like, oh, I'm just going to think about food instead of thinking about the fact that I'm stressed or I'm sad or any number of things.
Mm.
And I still do that. Like, I'll find myself not being, you know, happy, and I'm like, oh, why am I in such a bad mood? And then I shouldn't be in a bad mood. I should be happy. And I'm like, wait a minute, you know what? I'm allowed to not be happy right now.
Right.
I can just deal with that. I shouldn't go eat it. I shouldn't go. Because I'd be like, I've done that sometimes in the office and been like, come on, guys, let's go get sushi and eat our emotions if we've had a particularly trying day. And they're all like, Lindsay, that's not a good choice, but we can go for a walk. And I'm like, okay, I tried to be honest. But they do it too. Like, I've definitely noticed like really bad days and I'm like, do I need to take you for some sorbet? And they're like, that would be good, but then I would just be eating my feelings and I should process them.
And when we talk about, you know, self-care and, you know, being good to ourselves, and The easy way out in that is to, you know, give yourself some slack with the food or use food as a reward or comfort. But, you know, the really truly compassionate and caring thing is to listen to yourself when you're having these feelings, right?
Mm-hmm.
And give them the stage that they deserve and, you know, take them out and look at them. And, you know, that's a big challenge for any person, you know.
I love that. Give the emotions the stage they deserve. Because that's true. Because I think a lot of the times it's trying to fight emotions or not have them or pretend we don't have them, we don't want them, that's the problem, rather than just like deal with it, process it, and move forward.
Yeah. There was a couple weeks ago, you know, and I was dealing with something really stressful, and I was talking to my partner, and I said something about, man, I really want dessert right now. And he's like, you know, you really don't. Like, you're just really stressed about something. And the minute that he shut me down on that, I burst into tears, because all of a sudden I couldn't distract myself from, you know, what I was feeling anymore, because being an awesome supportive partner that he is, he kind of shut me down. And then, you know, being able to get that out and have it be done, and then to just move on, and it's great. It's a much better way to live, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, do we really want to go through life not processing it? I mean, that's really what we do when we eat our emotions. We just try to not process or be present in our life. And I like to remind myself that there's always an opposite. I don't know happiness without sadness. And anger is often there to tell you something needs to change. You know, that's one of the things I try to get with these so-called negative emotions. I try to be like, what is it telling me? And this actually came up with another meal plan member today that I was talking to, is one of the best pieces of advice I was ever given was, don't build a life that you need to take a vacation from. And the person that said it to me at the time, it was just kind of like an offhanded little comment. It wasn't really meant, but it was so profound for me. And I think about that all the time. It's like, why? I don't want to create a life where I need a break from it. So I need to understand, if I'm having all of these not so good feelings, why? What can I do to make it so I don't keep having them? Because this is the alert system. This is something in me saying, Lindsay, this has to change. This is not good. And right. I try to like pay attention to those warning signs.
Yeah, you know, and of course, how and what we feel is different for everyone. But I, you know, my personal experience is, you know, if you can just let those feelings pass through, then, you know, you've got much more room in your heart and your mind for all the happiness and gratitude that you can, and abundance that you can have in your life.
Yeah. Instead of just trying to like suppress it down or avoid it. And yeah. Hide it with food. And that was another thing that I definitely learned when I first went plant-based is there is no happiness in the bottom of a pint of Ben & Jerry's, no matter how much I thought there was. It doesn't exist down there.
Mm-hmm.
And so definitely something I think all of us probably struggle with a little. And I still do, even though I don't eat Ben & Jerry's. It's different foods, different times. I'll try to just eat my emotions. Cucumber sushi, especially.
Oh, cucumber sushi is good.
It's so good. I love it so much. And I can just keep popping them in my mouth. I'm like, here we go. Let's just keep going. I can go all day with sushi. I've never tested myself. I don't think I want to know how much I could actually eat, but I'm quite confident it would be a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel you on that one.
And I don't even chew it. Like, I generally try to be a good chewer. Like, okay, I'm going to chew this to a cream and really, like, help my digestive system along. No, sushi, I'm like, one chew, maybe two chews, swallow, next one. So that's my new thing. I've been trying to chew a lot. My husband and I have this, like, chewing roll where we each try to chew 20 times. And it's hard. It doesn't sound like a lot, but 20 chews is a lot. But I actually think I'm getting a nice jawline out of it, so...
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a lot to me.
And it's different for everything. Obviously, I couldn't chew mashed potatoes that much, but like raw kale, you actually could chew it 20 times, and then it's kind of like a smoothie in your mouth. But it's just been this interesting thing. Like we were at our doctor's, and I was like, I get so many questions about gas. What? And it's not just beans. Like, people tell me this when they eat apples. And I'm like, what can I tell them? I feel so bad all these people are switching to plant-based and having gas. He's like, they need to chew.
Yeah.
And I was like, well summarized. Thank you for reminding me. So ever since then, I've been like, okay, I'm going to chew a whole bunch. Lots of chew.
I mean,
not to get TMI or anything, but have you noticed a difference in that particular arena?
If oh, you absolutely. A lot? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, there's no TMI with me. Like, I talk about poop all day. It's really, I have a very different work atmosphere. And I have to remind myself that, like, I'm like, we have so many bizarre, like, I tried when I hired my first employee, I was like, I need to try to write, like, an employee handbook, and I was like, I don't even know how to write like about sexual harassment because we have to talk about erectile dysfunction on a near daily basis.
Yeah.
So words like penis, they just happen. But so me with my TMI. Yeah, it really has made a difference. Like my digestive system, I've been plant-based for so many years now that it's kind of sorted itself out for the most part. But there were still times where I had bloating or I had gas, and I was like, why? Why all of a sudden? And I never could figure it out. And for a while, I was like writing it down, like I would eat something and then say, and it never made sense. There was never some common thread of like a spice or an ingredient. Like, I just don't know. But I've since realized, for sure, no questions asked, that if I eat in a hurry, which I'm sure I'm swallowing a lot of air because I'm eating in a hurry, but if I eat in a hurry and I don't chew as well, I definitely and more likely, not always will it cause gas, but it definitely makes it much more likely to happen, especially later in the day, which I find even more strange. But it seems, I don't know, I can't placebo it to be sure, but it definitely seems to make a difference. And my husband has said he thinks so as well. Like, in his own experience, he also feels like if he doesn't chew as well, he definitely notices that you get, like, more toots or more likelihood of the toots.
Yeah. I feel like my personal experience with that, I've noticed this is something I've noticed since I started the meal plans, is when I was overeating, even though I was eating all no oil plant-based food, if I was eating just, if my quantity was too much, my chances of getting gas were way higher.
Oh, that's interesting. And that would make sense if there's too much there and your body's kind of like overwhelmed with trying to process it through.
Yeah, and it's just like, whoa, fiber is good, but this is crazy. What are you doing?
Yeah, it's the fiber. Yeah. And also, too, it's just the whole way gas happens is that it didn't get digested enough as it moved along. And so if you are overeating, that's probably very a much higher likelihood that everything's not going to get processed. And then bigger food particles go through when they shouldn't, and then gas, you know, creates. And
yeah.
I don't think anybody likes gas except maybe 7-year-olds.
No. But see, there you go. There's a new way you could advertise your meal plans.
Yeah!
How fewer gas. Farts.
Yeah. No, reduced farts. Farts are not us. I don't know. I'll come up with something catchy. Give me a second. No arse of farts. I don't know. I'll think of something. But yes, definitely. No, and oh my gosh, I get so many emails about that as well. Poop emails, and does nutritional yeast make your urine bright yellow? Yes. And what's the other one? I think I said poops. But yes, definitely, definitely poops and farts all day. And I was going to via email, which I understand. I wouldn't want to ask that on Twitter either.
Yeah. I can see that being, you know, I just don't mind, you know, talking to you about it and having it broadcast everywhere, but I might not put it where, my great aunt is going to see it, you know.
Yeah, that was, and my parents were really funny, because when they first switched to a plant-based diet, it was like, Lindsay, I need to ask a question. How many times a day does a person go to the bathroom? I'm like, well, increased frequency is not uncommon. And I try to be all professional. I'm like, yes, in a bowel movement, people are like, what? And I'm like, poop.
Yes.
Like, I try. I was like, I'm going to have this very professional. This is a very sensitive topic. And then it's like, okay. So, gas, farts, poop. Okay, cool. We can go with those words. And on that note. Oh, and when we, this is how much we talk about poop. That when we looked at how often we use various emoticons, like emojis, to talk to each other, myself and my staff, the poops, the smiling poopy, got way more. It was like 100 to 1. And I was like, because we use that emoticon that much. Anyway, so to stop talking about poop. Is there anything else you would like to add for anyone who's listening who might be considering the meal plans or who's new to plant-based or who's in an office environment like yours and isn't really sure how to handle the climate when they're different and they don't want to talk about it?
I think I would encourage people to not feel pressured to have to talk about it if they feel uncomfortable about it, that you can do you and do what's healthy for you, and just not really feel the pressure to disclose. You know, I think in our modern age, we're used to telling everybody about all of our business all the time, and you just don't have to. If you don't feel comfortable, just don't. You know, just bring your meals to work and do what's going to be best for you and get the benefits out of that. That's what I'd say.
I love it. That's true. It's very true. And I love that you bring your meal to work and you can still participate. I know you have because there's been like cheese, you know, things at work and stuff. And you just eat your food and let them enjoy their food. But you're there for the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I said earlier, you know, there was a potluck yesterday and everybody bought into the pizza pool there. And I just brought my little Tupperware down with my meal in it, my Tropicale bowl. And I sat and I, you know, socialized with my coworkers and nobody really cared that much. I mean, no one cares as much about you as you do, really.
Yeah, no, that's very true. And sometimes you'll think like, oh, they're looking and it's like, well, maybe they're just curious because it looks good and smells yummy. So
yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, if you want to learn more and join us, you can find out more at getmealplans.com. And of course, if you are a member, you can say hi to Jen in the forums and the Facebook group. She's very active, very fun, very friendly, as we saw today. And thanks, everybody, for listening. I was your host, Lindsay. Bye.